I think when people come here, what they're hoping for is just the gift of another person who will accept them completely as they are and who will love them completely as they are, and that they're going to in turn be able to love that person back.
I moved to Dublin in the year 2000, which sounds like it's in the future, but actually it's in the past. I spent a lot of time exploring the city on my own, going to museums and libraries and churches. You know, the kind of thing every well-adjusted, popular 19-year-old does their first year in college. That's how I came across loads of odd little things hidden away in Dublin, especially in the churches. In Christchurch Cathedral, I saw the skeletons of a rat and a cat on display. The theory is the cat chased the rat into the organ pipes and they both got stuck and they both died and then they were mummified. The best thing I found was in Whitefriars Church on Ainger Street. There's an altar devoted to St. Valentine in one corner of the church, a big statue of him and candles that you can light all around, draped with a heavy red velvet cloth that says in gold lettering, "St. Valentine, listen." Underneath the altar is a glass case. There's a sturdy little treasure chest inside it. And inside that, there's a sealed wooden box. And inside that box are St. Valentine's bones. Some of them, anyway. Alongside a glass vial supposedly tinged with his blood. They're relics, given to the church by Pope Gregory XVI in 1836. There's also a notebook. A simple, softcover notebook that people write to St. Valentine in. They put their prayers down on paper, asking for what they need, telling him their secret hopes or fears. It's all there in the pages, and anybody can read it. When I first read the book, the quiet Catholic church I was standing in suddenly filled up with the most romantic, dramatic, hopeful, and private moments of people's lives. I couldn't quite believe it existed.
A young couple, very young couple, I would say late teens, and they were non-nationals, and both of them extremely handsome looking, and the two of them were just in front of the altar here, and the two of them holding hands, and the two of them tears streaming down their faces, both of them, the boy and the girl.
So you see, it definitely exists. Father Brian McKay puts it there. He's sort of in charge of the book, replacing it when it's full and storing all the old ones upstairs. I'm a bit jealous of his job. I mean, imagine getting these glimpses into people's lives and hearts pretty much every day.
I longed to interfere, but I didn't. And I was just wondering, were they desperately in love with one another? I suppose they were, actually. Were they after having a row and had made up? But whatever it was, there was huge emotion and they were in front of Valentine, and Valentine was obviously helping them to come to terms with whatever it was bothering them. I would love to have spoken to them, but I just felt this was intimate. There were the two of them and there was Valentine, and there wasn't really room for anybody else.
If they wrote in the book, were you tempted to come and open the book after they left?
I was, but they looked, I would say they were either Spanish or Italian, I would think. And so what they wrote in the book, I don't have either Spanish or Italian, I'm afraid. So intriguing though it was, I couldn't read it.
It's weird that in all the time I've been coming into the church and reading the book, I've barely seen anybody actually write in it. I've always wondered what sort of people write to Valentine.
All sorts, sizes, shapes and conditions of human beings. And because we get people young and perhaps people not so young, and people who are in love and people hoping that they might be in love, and people looking for a partner and people hoping that the partner they already have will stay with them. So the love dimension is always there.
There's someone who's gotten engaged.
Valentine, my dear, on the 29th of August at your shrine, please watch over us and watch all our studies. Sorry, and is that right? And take care of all our studies in the coming year. Yes, which is lovely. And you see, you notice that we got engaged here on the 29th of August. Mm. It could very well imply, the wording seems to imply that it was actually in front of this shrine that they got engaged. And you see, that again is not unusual here.
I wonder if it is unusual to be some girl who's been silently reading the book for 13 years, imagining the lives of the people who write in it. I'm mortified to say there was a time when I thought I was like Amelie, you know, from the film. Really quirky and adorable, knowing all these secret cute things. And then I brought this guy I was seeing into the church to show him the book. He wasn't Irish or Catholic, so maybe the whole church thing spooked him. Or maybe it was the bones and blood thing. Also, we weren't even together that long at the time, so it could have been the whole true love thing. Whatever it was, he was pretty uncomfortable. And that experience made me feel terrible. Like, maybe it wasn't fair to come traipsing in and showing off the book whenever I felt like it.
I sometimes wonder, do people realise that there may be somebody else reading these? But I suspect they know that. That part of writing it is that their story is for anybody that might be interested. Either maybe to get a little bit of encouragement themselves or to realise that there is true love to be found and St. Valentine is your only man.
When I first found The Notebook almost 13 years ago, I thought it was charming and sweet, but I was sceptical. I just couldn't believe people were so focused on finding love. I remember thinking, I would never be so desperate to find a boyfriend that I'd come into a church and write prayers in a notebook to a statue. So them now are, help my children in their relationships. Mm. Help Joan and me. They are kind of relationships. Please pray for my husband. Help him see we love him. I want us all to work as a family. Mm. They're quite...
There you are. There's an interesting one. Please ask God for a holy husband and the person's name that's put in.
Yeah.
And you know, it's I suppose people have, when they come to St. Valentine, they've already got a certain idea of the partner that they're looking for. Mm. And so they ask Valentine, is there any chance, you know, that you can actually help me find the right person? Mm-hmm. Not just any person, you know, but the right one.
In the years since I first found the book, I've been bruised, falling off my high horse, and I recovered and I learned and I had a ball and I hope I got some empathy along the way. I feel like something shifted in me when I reached my 30s and I began to understand the need for some kind of long-term buddy system in life. You know, a partner. Although I really hate the word partner. It's too grown up, it's too businessy. Like, we initially merged in the first quarter and we shared the same corporate values and I offered him a buy-in. Anyway, partner's not the ideal word, but I hope you know what I mean. I mean, like, this invisible pull towards something like... Not to put too fine a point on it, but true and everlasting love. I came back to Whitefriars Church and back to Valentine's Notebook with even more curiosity. I wanted to find the people who write in it and ask them why and what exactly they were looking for and, of course, whether or not they'd found it. I sat on the back pew with the microphone and waited for people. At the start, it was fine. I felt like I was on a stakeout. But hardly anyone came along in the 3 days I waited, and the ones that did didn't want to talk to me. I gave up after one man pretended his phone was ringing and literally ran away. But I couldn't stop thinking about the book and all the stories in it and the people behind them. So I put a notice with my contact details on the altar, asking people to share their experience of The Notebook, but not holding out much hope that anybody would. I was ready to play the long game. Sure, I was hoping somebody would call, but I was cool about it. My friends would ask if there'd been any contact, and I'd shrug and say no, but it's no big deal. I called in to Father McKay, casually. He said there were plenty of people writing the book. I said, oh, good. And I checked that I'd put the right phone number on the notice. I had. I waited, and then I waited so long I got distracted by other things, but I still thought about The Notebook right before I fell asleep every night. Eventually, I just stopped waiting. And then one day, I got a missed call from a private number. I assumed it was my credit card company calling about overdue fees, but it wasn't.
You have one new voice message.
It was way better than that.
Good morning. Just calling in connection with your sign on the shrine of St. Valentine in Whitefriar Street. If you wish to call me, my name is Jacinta Marr.
I should explain that I was so excited to finally meet someone who wrote in the book that I was kind of yelling at Jacinta when we met in the doorway. Then she lowered her voice because we were in a church. So I followed her lead and lowered mine even more. And then she lowered hers again. So that's how we came to stand whispering in front of Valentine.
It's funny every morning, you know, if you go to write in the book and somebody comes along and they see you write back, you know. I wait till you're gone. It's cast. And when you're gone, then you see them kind of going up to do their little piece, you know. So it really is, I think, for people to... Although they're writing in a book that's quite public, it's very private, you know what I mean, as well.
I don't know who I was expecting, but I was surprised because Jacinta was like a cool business lady. She'd just come from her job in a city centre bank and she looked so glamorous. And she was wearing a wedding ring.
Well, I think most people, an awful lot of people, with regard to the shrine at St. Valentine, I think it's to meet a partner, to meet somebody, you know. And a lot of what would be written in the book would be that. Then a lot of people pray for maybe marriages that are in trouble. Huge amount of that too. And again, St. Val, I think people just, you know, he's the man of love. That's the way I always think of him anyway.
And have you, so you write in the book?
Yes.
What have you written in the book?
Of course, that my marriage, I mean, I'm 30 years married and I have a really happy marriage and that it will always be like that for maybe whatever time left, and that the boys would follow in that. They'll always have a lovely relationship, happy, content and kind to each other.
Do your sons know that you write?
No. I'd be shot. Absolutely, they go mad.
Jacinta was so at home in the church. She drops into Mass most mornings before work and writes regularly in Valentine's book. I think I felt so comfortable talking to her about the notebook and about St. Valentine because it's all just so familiar to her. I mean, she even abbreviates his name.
I'd have no doubt in my mind that Val found in the partners that they have and that they're the way they are. Yeah, definitely. No question about it. I think if you pray it, okay, pray your request, I think writing it down just intensifies that message that you want to get across to the particular saint, i.e. Valentine. Listen, I really want this, I really need it. It intensifies, that's the word I would use, the feeling that's inside and that you really want this to happen. I just think it's really nice when you're, you know, there's so many marriages in trouble today and really, you know, I work with people and it's tough. So I think if you have happiness at all in a relationship, it's just such a wonderful, it's the basis for everything. It helps you through and you can get through, you can move mountains with it. So I think it's hugely important, you know, to have sort of love in your life.
Where did you meet your husband? And
that's a funny one. I met my husband by going to a do with another guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and through the night, my husband came into the room and just sat down because he knew the guy that I had gone to the dance with. And the guy that I went to the dance with went off for smokes or the loo or whatever, and we just got chatting. And he asked me, could he see me again? And I said, yeah. And he said, the weekend? And I said, yeah. Because the guy I went to the do it, we were more friends anyway. It wasn't kind of anything underhanded. Now, I have to stress that. So we met the following weekend on a Sunday night. And it was the beginning of a wonderful relationship. And it just turned out, coincidentally, down the road, in the past, my mum and dad and his mum and dad had been friends, which we absolutely knew nothing about. And just one night I went to the house and there was a photograph on the mantle of my mum and dad and his mum and dad and some other people. So, yeah, so really my mum and dad were quite happy. And likewise. So it all, so that was it. And we're together ever since. As I say, coming up now in October, 30 years.
Next message received at 10:40.
Hi, Maeve. I saw you at the St. Valentine's Shrine, and I'd like to tell you about my aunt. Thanks, Leanne.
Whitefriar Church is on Andrew Street, a busy street, loads of traffic and a constant flow of people. It's between a youth hostel and a charity shop. There's a gym further up the road, and it's just across from a Turkish restaurant and a newsagent and a wedding dress shop. At the top of the street is a big DIT building, and Leanne saw my notice the day she dropped into the church after registering for college there.
My granny used to come to this church, so then I kind of just pop in when I'm in town because she's dead, but you know, it just kind of reminds me of her, and it's just a nice place to kind of come in and get a bit of quiet time. I knew that the shrine was up there and the book was there, and it just looked kind of sweet. And then I told my aunts, who are kind of like in their mid-40s, so they're kind of panicking about finding love and starting a family, so I told them about it, and they were like, yeah, lash up the candles there.
Did you ever write in the book for yourself?
More for like my aunts, but like I have a boyfriend, so things are going well, so I just want him to keep it going, but there's no emergency there, so.
When did you start writing the book, and what ages were your aunties then?
Probably, I don't know, 3 years ago when I came up to Dublin, so they're mid-40s now.
What do you ask for in the book?
Just that they'll just be happy, and because they want to be mums, and so I hope like that comes around to them, because you know, time is running out, so. And I was successful with one. She has married a divorcee, and they have a baby together, so she's delighted. So at her wedding, she did thank everyone for their prayers and their candles to get her new man, so she was very thankful.
Do you believe that it made a difference, that you writing the book and lighting candles and asking Valentine? Do you think it made a difference to that aunt and not to the other one, or what do you think about that?
Well, the one that's happy now, she'd be more open, and you know, she didn't, you know, she made a divorcee and she didn't mind. That was fine, you know, because you know, everyone has a past at that age, so it's fine. Whereas the other one, she'd be more picky, and she has a long list of things that he has to be, so divorcee or our previous children or chubby or bald or any of those things just do not suit her. So I think she's narrowed herself out of the market, really. But sure, we'll keep trying for her.
Hearing about Leanne's aunt's list of no-nos made me wonder if I'm too fussy. I mean, a man who's over 5 foot tall with a full driving license, someone with a lisp and a scar, this impossible creature willing to eat every sultana I pick out of banana bread, could he exist? Who knows? Maybe I'll ask Valentine for help.
Do you believe in it, do you?
Yeah, any help is good help, I think.
Obviously, I'm born on St. Valentine's Day, so you know, there's a bit of a relationship there.
You don't have your middle name's not Val or anything like that?
It is Valentine, yeah. I can only thank my parents for not calling me Valentine, so that's a good thing about it, you know. So I've one friend of mine who's a school friend who lives in The Hague in Holland now, and he still calls me Valentine, you know. So I think it's more of a slag than anything else.
When I heard from Alan, a college lecturer and a regular contributor to The Notebook, I couldn't get over the fact that he was born on St. Valentine's Day.
I think when it came into maybe, you know, teenage years, you know, having your birthday on Valentine's Day was a bit of a novelty, you know, and how many Valentine's cards did you get versus how many birthday cards did you get, that kind of thing, you know. So, no, it had no real, real relevance, you know. I suppose, as I say, the only relevance that I can remember it becoming in my life was, as I say, last year when it just seemed to open up a channel for me through that. And it's interesting, every note that I write is Dear St. Valentine, and I often wonder, well, why am I saying Dear Adele or Hi Adele or something like that, you know? So but I always start off the same sentence, and then I say, then I go into, you know, speaking to Adele almost in the first person as such.
Alan said he saw the notice I'd left on the altar many times, the one asking people to get in touch and tell their stories about Valentine's book. But he had to really think about it before deciding eventually to do so.
in, so just go back, you know, Adele was healthy, well, very fit, and then in October 2010, she developed a bad back pain, and by Christmas 2010, it was still there. She had had a scan and nothing showed up, and she was on pain treatment and anti-inflammatory treatment, that kind of thing. Then Christmas came and went, and then we went on a skiing holiday in February 2011, and she couldn't ski. And we came back, and she went back to her doctor, and they went sent for another scan on the 22nd of March. Our doctor called us, our GP called us to meet us immediately together. And 9 days later, she was diagnosed with liver, bone, and lung cancer, out of the blue, like just, you know, nuts stuff, you know. So she was in a hospital. The Blackrock Clinic became her second home almost for those 6 months. Then in July, she got a kind of bit of a reprieve, and they said, you know, we possibly don't want to see her for 3 months. And we were delighted. We thought the cancer had gone away. And then September, October 2011, the cancer came back very aggressively in her bones. But at this stage, you know, I had to have a meeting with in private with the consultant and so on. And, you know, he gave me a kind of a fairly definitive roadmap that didn't read well at all. She really, really struggled through Christmas, and in January 2012, last year, she went back into the Blackrock Clinic for the for, you know, another session of chemotherapy. And at that stage, they called me inside and said, look, we just have to stop the chemotherapy at this stage. It's just doing her more harm than good. And and effectively, you know, they sat down and told Adele that she had 18 months to live, and that was it, and there's nothing more they can do for her. So we left the Blackrock Clinic and we were put under the care of the hospice in Harold's Cross, magnificent organisation. She was an outpatient, she was at home, so they visited our house 3 times a week. You know, one morning she just woke up and she could hardly breathe, and that was the 1st of February. I remember I drove down Foster's Avenue coming from Rathfarnham, where we live, and I knew in my heart and soul this was the last time I'd be driving down Foster Avenue with Adele in the car. And then she was 6-7 days in hospital, and she passed away on Wednesday the 8th of February, 12:40 in the morning. Yeah, so, I mean, like, I start coming here just, you know, lighting a few candles, saying a few prayers, doing a bit of crying in private, and then I saw the notebook, and then that's about a year ago. You know, the first time you write in it, you automatically skip back a few pages and see what everyone else is writing. And, you know, there's a lot of sadness obviously going on in it, but there's also a lot of people writing to say, well, dear St. Valentine, let's hope I can win the lottery to save me from the recession, or you know, similar type stuff. Which,
yeah,
you can,
there's a weight loss one in there at the moment.
Yeah. And there's there was one I read yesterday when I was here about dear St. Valentine, can you please you know, inspire, I presume it was a boyfriend, I won't name the name, to bring me to the pictures tonight, and that we can go out together, you know. So,
yeah.
So there's that kind of stuff going on as well at what I call the lower level, if you like. And you know, I'm not sure if anyone's doing what I'm doing. And I'm not saying I'm unique at all. It just works for me in relation to being able to tell Adele, you know, what I'm doing, how our daughter Niamh, who's 11, how she's doing in school, and her new teacher, and, you know, whatever, you know, her piano and blah blah blah, all the bits and pieces, and how she's doing. And, you know, when we visit her grave, you know, I'll say we clean the grave up. I've just found it that it is the only really communication channel that I've been able to open up and freely write. If the truth be known, I could write pages and pages and pages.
Why do you think that, like, you know, writing a notebook at home, you know,
you know, it's a really good question, Maeve. I think there's a certain box you walk into when you come into this place, and it encloses you into a mindset or a framework in your mind that enables you to open up. It almost acts as a catalyst to doing what you want to do. When you go home, you got to make the dinner, you got to do the homework, you got to answer the phone, whatever, you know, you're into real life. I suppose, well, from a home perspective, you know, doing it here, you're outside the environment of home, you're outside the environment of where we were both very happy, where we both lived, where we both built a home, family. And so sometimes it's difficult to do those things there. And I think it's interesting that I'm writing in what is effectively a public notebook, and it's like really private stuff. Like it's like heart. It's really from the heart stuff, you know. So I think that's interesting. The fact that I'm doing it, you know, and why I keep coming back again and again, you know. Strange. There's been very few things I found helpful in you know, helping me dealing with what I've dealt with since Adele's passing. And, you know, I suppose the most difficult thing to deal with is the fact that it's just not fair. She should still be here. But here, when you come to here, it's... I'm reluctant to call it escapism, because I don't think it is. But it is certainly an escape of... or from the usual, inverted commas, the usual way of grieving. And it's worked for me as something different and something tangible. Because all day long, I do my bits and pieces of work, I do whatever I have to do with Niamh, I you know, do the shopping, do the housework, whatever. And all the time, at some stage, in and out, you know, Adele is coming in and out of your brain the whole time. So, but it's flighty, yeah? Okay, when you lie down in bed maybe and you're, you know, sitting down in the sitting room with a glass of wine in your hand, contemplating life and all that, she's there and all, and you're thinking about her and you're wondering why and the ifs and the whats and what if, and we should have done this and we should have done that and we shouldn't be working so hard and we shouldn't have, you know, and you've all excuses. But coming in here, you can actually put things down on paper in a setting that lends itself to speaking to somebody. Yeah, death changes everything, you know. It and losing a loved one changes everything in your life. Changes perspective, it changes depth, it changes vision, it changes priorities. I think a lot of, you know, mediums or catalysts that people use for bereavement therapy are surrounded around, you know, outside of normal counselling now, outside of bereavement counselling, outside of thing, but they use hypnosis, they use, you know,
psychics.
Psychics and transcendental meditation, all that kind of stuff, you know, meditation and means to transpond with their loved ones, you know. And this is not that, you know. I think it's very important to note that I don't think there's no magical heebie-jeebie around this, you know. It's just, for me, it's a personal channel to Adele through the medium of, I'm not sure if it's through the medium of St. Valentine or is it through the medium of White Forest Street. I think it's a bit of both, you know, for me. I can still talk and relate and, you know, be with Adele as much as I can. Yeah, there'll always be a hole in my heart, but it's, you know, grief and management of grief and grieving is all about just managing the hole, you know, so that you don't fall into it. And also turn grief into something good, you know. I don't know. Is this turning grief into something good? I'm not sure. I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. But there's some weeks I'm here, like, and you know, maybe you look back, and this is at the end of the notebook. And even though you look back, and you were here maybe 2 weeks before that, you can't find your note. So there's a huge amount of people using this, you know, for whatever reasons.
Do you ever meet anyone else who's writing the book?
No. Every time I come here, there's no one here. You know, and that's not because it's 5 o'clock in the morning. It's always, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning. Kind of on the way into work, kind of thing, you know. So I'll flip through the pages. So here it is. Here, there isn't much stuff since yesterday. Oh, there is a bit.
It's probably about six centuries.
Do you want to read the whole thing?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I don't mind. Yeah. So I always start off with saying, "Dear St. Valentine's, can you keep Adele warm and make sure that she is comfortable?" Because it. She loved being warm. She loved her heat, you know. Because I didn't. I loved the cold, you know. So it was always a bone of contention. Adele, it seems to be getting harder and harder. The feeling of not having you around. I notice that I can cry a lot easier these days, and sometimes the slightest thing will set me off. I really want to turn back the clock and make you better and take you away on a holiday to Donegal where we can reshape our lives. I found it very difficult to sleep last night as I was quite upset thinking a lot about the night you died. I cannot understand why this happened to you. It's just not fair. Your old school has nominated a girl to take up your scholarship, and I am meeting with the principal on Friday to arrange to meet the girl. I'll just explain that. Adele's old school, which is the Assumption College in Walkinstown and Dublin Business School, where she worked for 16 years together, created a scholarship in her name. There was a sign on the shrine over the past month asking people to share their thoughts and experiences of the St. Valentine's Notebook on a radio programme. So after some thought, I decided to email RTE Radio my story about how I feel that I can communicate with you through St. Valentine's Notebook. I'm not sure if it is the right thing to do, but you know me, good feelings. Neve is good. She's going for election to the student council. I'll let you know how she... how that goes. Chat soon, honey. Love, Alan.
Hearing Alan reading and getting upset made me upset, and I just froze. Now, I wish I would have put my arm around him or told him I was sorry or something, but instead I just stood there and I couldn't talk. I'm sure at this stage Alan is used to people not knowing what to say. He told me he cries all the time after he writes in the book, but he feels better afterwards. But I still feel like my silence was not ideal. From a human point of view, obviously, and more practically, from a radio point of view. Eventually, I got my voice back and I asked Alan how he met Adele.
I was working in for an organisation in Germany, in Nuremberg, and I was contacted by a company in Ireland who were interested in hiring me. And I came back for Christmas in 1994 and I had an interview with them and I got the job. And Adele was the financial controller for the company. As part of the interview process, I met her because she was a serious figure in the company. And there was an instantaneous spark.
Interview you for the job, did she?
No, she didn't know. I met her after the interview, and you know, and she gave me a tour of the building actually, and you know, around the various warehouses and parts of the building. It was a distribution, cash and carry distribution company, and you know, and she would have heard of me in the trade, like she would have known my name and such in the trade, and so she's all inquisitive about what I was doing in Germany, and did I have a girlfriend and all that kind of stuff, you know, so.
She asked you that on the tour.
I think so, yeah.
So, I think that's like illegal.
Yeah, it probably is, yeah. But it was just a more of a casual conversation though, you know.
Yeah.
So, but she was fishing. She was fishing, you know, yeah. She's a clever girl now, telling you, she's a clever girl, you know. And then for the 3 months that I went back to Germany, I had to work my 3 months notice between December and March 95. And there was we kept in touch by phone. And if I remember the phone, I was on the phone for hours in my apartment in Nuremberg. It cost me a fortune. But I knew before I came home that we were made for each other, you know. It was love at first sight and all that kind of stuff, you know. So that's how we met, yeah. And then, you know, we were, I suppose, going out with each other for 3-4 years, I don't know, I forget. And we got married in 1999. So January 99, yeah. So all good stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Real love story, you know, so.
Yeah.
So it was good. It was good, yeah.
Most people write in the book asking Valentine to help them find true love. But Alan did find his true love, but then he lost her. And that loss, that total heartbreak on another level, that's ahead of everybody who truly loves somebody else. Yet that love, that full-on, deep-end, big, real love that knocks you out when it's gone, that's exactly what people are praying for. And I thought about how brave that is. To seek that love out, to do anything to find it, even write prayers in a notebook to a statue.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.